This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. What makes something funny depends largely on context, the what and the where, the when and the how. But the who, that is the people, can make a tremendous difference. And in the case of improvisational theater, that who includes folks taking the stage and sitting in the audience, and historically and overwhelmingly, improv has been white. In late 2023, a small group of Black improvisers who met at the Improv Shop in St. Louis came together to form a team for themselves. That team is called Some Black People, and joining us today to share its backstory and how its members regard the success it has seen in a relatively short time, we have three of its members. Jessica Nicole is the founding member of Some Black People. Welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hi.
We also have Charles Harris, who has been in St. Louis for a while and doing improv for quite some time, too. Welcome.
That's right. Yeah, thank you.
And finally, we have Aaron Moore. Aaron Moore is also, he's someone actually who's native of St. Louis and been doing improv just for a few years here.
Correct.
Welcome.
Correct. Yeah, thank you for having us.
So let's go back to the beginning personally. And Jessica, we'll start with you. When was it that you took your first improv class, and what was it like?
Sure. It was sometime in 2022. It was nerve-wracking. It was really scary. There's a lot of, like, vulnerability. There's a lot of strangers involved. So at first, it was very, very nerve-wracking. But slowly, it became something that was really interesting and intriguing and helpful to me personally.
What was the thing that made you step into the shop in the first place?
There's a painted sign on the outside that says classes. And I was just taking a lot of different classes. I took a philosophy class. I took a pottery class. Silk aerial class. And so when I saw classes, I just looked it up and it intrigued me. So I went after it.
Mm-hmm. Did you confer with anyone before you did that?
No, of course not. No. I just logged into the website, paid the money, and impulsively took the class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Charles, I understand that you, among the three of you, you are sort of the veteran of the group.
Yeah.
You started back like in 2014, 2015?
Yeah. Yeah. Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
It'll be... I graduated 10 years ago in April this year. So
how did you find your way into improv?
I was saving up for an iPad and I didn't want it anymore.
Oh,
and so I Googled improv and spent the iPad money on classes.
Okay.
I was like 20, just like living on like an on-campus apartment at Webster.
Yeah.
Just looking for something to do. And I should have been working on my film degree, but I decided to do improv instead.
Okay. What is it that you noticed sort of in the context of what we're talking about the whiteness of improv, what did you notice at first, if anything, and did that change over time?
Yeah, I mean, the lack of people that looked like me was an immediate observation. And that has since changed quite a bit, I think. Not just because of some of the diversity work that we have done in the space, but I think more and more, Black people are becoming more interested in the art form, and it's sort of across the medium, there's been an increase of participation.
Yeah. That increase in participation, Aaron, you kind of represent a little bit of that. How is it that you found your way into improv very recently, actually?
Yeah, so I graduated kind of somewhere, I mean, like March of 2023 ish, maybe April. But I found my way into improv. Honestly, I was going through a lot of stuff in life. It was pretty heavy time for me. Lots of sadness, loneliness, and things like that. So it was 2 a.m. one night, and I made a Google search for like things Black depressed men should do in St. Louis, and a lot of stuff came up, and the improv shop came up, and I went to every page on the website. I looked at every video, read every kind of testimonial, and then kind of like Jessica, before I went to bed, I went and I enrolled in a class, and then I went to sleep.
Yeah,
and I never stepped foot inside the place, never seen a show or anything like that. And before mm-hmm. I knew it, I was doing it.
Yeah. And just to let those who are listening know, the laugh was elicited because I see Jessica and Charles sort of respond to the story that you're telling about the way that you found your way into improv theater.
Yeah.
And I imagine that this is something that you all have talked about quite a bit, right?
Yeah. We've talked about it a lot. I've heard that story quite a few times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Aaron always seems to get a little bit of joy out of telling it, so it gives me joy as well.
Because it was such a crazy thing for me to do. I'm like, what am I doing? You know, because I needed something. I've always been in arts and entertainment, and I had stopped doing that for a very long time. And I'm like, I need something.
Yeah.
And it was just like, maybe I'll just ask Google.
Yeah. And Google delivered.
Google delivered.
I think the common thread is the improv shop calls to people when they need it.
That's real. I mean, it's a lot of folks. So my story, the improv shop as a whole, isn't really unique. There's a lot of people that have come to the improv shop due to heavy circumstances in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Some are just looking for hobbies. Some are looking to, like Jessica said, she's taking a lot of classes. You know, she wanted to do something. So there's a lot of people that come for various different reasons. Some mm-hmm. some want to be better at public speaking or kind of get out of their introvert kind of nature.
Yeah.
Right? So it's awesome once you get into that community and you find out people's DNA and why they're there. So
before we get too much further, I'd like to hear about the basics of improv, sort of get a primer. Mm-hmm. So Charles, maybe as someone who has been doing improv for the longest, what are those basics? How is improv different from, for example, SNL, what we're seeing there?
Yeah.
Just as a point of reference.
Yeah. So, SNL is sketch and improv is made up on the spot. It's all improvised then and there. And they are kind of cousins in mm-hmm. that way because a lot of improv does lead to sketch. But I would say the most basic tenet is yes and. So you are, you know, with a scene partner essentially, you're agreeing to the gifts that they give you, to the things that they say and do in the circumstances. And then the and is you're adding on to that. So mm-hmm. you are, you know, taking the step further to honor that work even further.
Right.
Which creates this, you know, sort of collaborative, alchemical environment mm-hmm. that results in some wild stuff.
Yes, we are at the grocery store, and I'm not buying you Cheerios today.
Okay. Right. So this is how it then starts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I have seen the term game used just to describe improv. Mm-hmm. How is that relevant?
So it depends on which genre of improv you're talking about, right? So like short form, which a lot of people are more familiar with, that would be like Whose Line Is It Anyway
mm-hmm.
type improv. They are playing games. But games with, like, a point. You can't really win, obviously, mm-hmm. outside of being the funniest, which everyone tries to do.
Okay.
And you know the rules. They'll tell you the rules in advance. Rules. Here's the game we're going to play. Here's how you play.
Right. Mm-hmm. In a long-form improv context, which is what we do, and some other examples of that would be, like, Middle Ditch and Swartz?
Yeah.
Okay.
On Netflix and stuff like that. What's the YouTube channel that? Oh, Dropout.
Dropout.
Yeah. They do both actually.
Okay.
But long form is more scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And game of the scene is like a tenet that some regions and improv institutions follow. And that's sort of just the bit. That's like the thing that you were doing in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
The easy, repeatable. Thing that you kind of like heighten as you go along.
Right.
And we don't really do game in St. Louis. We do more like relationship based improv.
So what is an example, Jessica or Aaron, of one of the ones that you've done recently?
Of how we play?
Yeah, of how you've played.
Sure. So we do a lot of relationship based, like we said. So we'll identify ourselves as a mother and a son.
Yeah. We always know each other. That's what we never do scenes where we don't there's no strangers in the scene.
Sure.
So what you're looking for is like a slice of these characters' lives. You're dropping in on a dynamic that happens with them pretty frequently. So I might have a son who is always late for school, and I'm angry about this. You always choose an emotion to represent, and he might be sad. So we'll have a game that we play, ultimately, using that emotion in the relationship that people can relate to in the audience. Mm-hmm. So they'll say, oh, I see myself in that scene where I'm angry, Aaron is sad, and then we'll calm down. We'll have a nice moment where we understand each other, and then that trigger will get reinflamed.
Yeah, and my yes and may be something completely crazy as to why I'm sad, right? I'm always late for school, and I'm sad because I never get to use a number 3 pencil, and all I want to use is number 3, and everybody wants to use a number 2. And we will exacerbate that scene, and it will be the most ridiculous thing as to why this is why I'm late, because I agonize over me not being able to use number 3 pencils in school.
Which is enraging my character.
Yes. Okay,
let's
right.
go to school. It doesn't right. matter the pencil, please. Yeah.
Yeah. And how long does one of these sketches typically last? Or one of these
scenes,
right?
Yeah. Some scenes are 2 minutes. Sometimes, you know, folks will do a mono scene, which is just one scene for the entire show.
20, 25 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Where you have to really dig in and root your character in something real.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest differences that you will see between use like an SNL or like long form improv is, if you think about SNL, they're in the writer's room, and they are coming up with these sketches, right? Like what works, what doesn't work. Improv, particularly long form, is kind of like seeing the writer's room in action. You're seeing us build this thing in front of your eyes.
Oh, right. It's like the flying the plane while you're flying.
Exactly.
Building it as you fly it.
Yeah.
So especially if you are doing something that is relational, how is it that having a team of all black improvisers, how does that play into making what you do both more enjoyable to you all and more fun for the audience to watch, Charles?
Specificity is like a cheat code in improv. Mm-hmm. If you describe something with vivid specifics, people will laugh no matter what, pretty much, I found. And so with a group like Some Black People, we bring cultural specificity, which is huge to me. There's a scene that we did, like a group scene, that we still get compliments on. Someone was talking about it on Saturday. We did a scene where we were like leaving the pageant, or we were arriving to the pageant to see like Kevin Hart. And we did the scene was that I did not like Kevin Hart that much. So they just did Kevin Hart bits. They quoted Kevin Hart bits at me for like 2 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
Actually didn't know any of them. I didn't know if they were real or not. But we still get like compliments on that scene, and it's because of that cultural specificity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And was that something that you felt was missing as you were getting deeper into improv, Jessica?
Yes, big time. When I joined the training school, I would start going to shows. And I saw lots of different shows. Improv teams are usually formed around some commonality. Mm-hmm. So I saw an all-gay team. I saw all-women teams. And I just kept coming. I'm like, they've got to be here somewhere. They've got to be. And then finally, when I realized there weren't, I was like, well, here I am. Let's do it.
Yeah, they're peppered on other teams, like college brochures.
So I would see Aaron play or Charles play, Kendall, Donovan. And I would be like, we've got to come together. And it was the precedent that was set by the all-female teams and the gay teams. Like, this is okay. This is perfectly normal. We deserve to be together and play together and share this common experience together.
Aaron?
Yeah, no, I think just to echo everything Jessica said, I think it is one of those things where we all knew of each other, but taking Jessica to be like, well, why don't we just do this together? And then it makes, and you will hear this in pretty much any all-black improv team around the country, that there is a freedom and there is just kind of like this weight of like, man, I can say anything that I want to say and not have to worry if my scene partner will get that. Kind of like Charles, will they get this reference?
Yeah.
Will they understand this, what I'm alluding to here?
Mm-hmm.
When you're amongst people that have some of the same lived experiences as you, also very different, there's like, man, I can hit the stage with so much ease.
Right, right. Mm. So there's a kind of freedom that comes with that, too.
Mm-hmm.
How many other all-Black improv teams are there around the country?
It's hard to say around the country. There's some pretty big name ones. The Big Team, mm-hmm. Three-Peat, Lemon Pepper Wet. But they're normally on the coast.
Yeah.
They're not really throughout the Midwest.
Yeah, mm-hmm. in Chicago, mm-hmm. I guess, yeah. which is like...
The birth of
yeah.
of improv sort of there.
Right, absolutely.
It's becoming more popular. It is becoming more popular.
Mm-hmm.
It is because I think once Black people started realizing what improv was and we saw it, we watched it, at least for me, I was like,
I can do that.
Yeah. And like,
do that all the time?
I do this stuff with my cousins.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
FM reunions.
My sister and I like, are constantly improvising
we
together.
Just cut up all the time. And
yeah.
I'm like, there's a structure around, like, I want you to cut up and you can act crazy, but I'm going to show you how to structure it. It's like, mm-hmm. it's like like an artist having raw talent or an athlete that is just like rawly gifted.
Yeah.
And then a coach comes in and says, what if I can take everything that you do naturally and just put some structure around it,
mm-hmm.
teach you some fundamentals, you know?
So what did Black people who thought they knew improv, what did they think it was, or what do they think it is, Jessica?
What's the question? I'm sorry.
So, Aaron, you talked mm-hmm. about how Black people were thinking, I think that improv is this, this, and this.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. What are sort of the conceptions around what improv is? Charles, you're nodding.
At least my like parents and my family, before seeing it, it was like, yeah, what skit are you doing? Can you do the skit right now? My uncle's like, you know, cutting up and he's like, put that in one of your skits.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah. I had a friend come see the whole show. And then afterwards, she's like, how long did it take you to write that?
Yeah. Oh,
like, we didn't write a single drop of that.
Okay.
This is a commonality, like among like everyone, I would say.
Yeah.
Who doesn't have all the info. But I think that a lot of things that are like relevant within the Black community, like Wild and Out, for example, the like Nick Cannon show, which is short form improv. Mm-hmm. It's not framed that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a very quick break here. But when we come back, we will continue this conversation about diversifying improv in St. Louis. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about the art form of improv and diversifying it. And we're talking today with Jessica Nicole, Charles Harris, and Aaron Moore, three of the five members of the all-Black improv team, Some Black People. Now, before the break, we were talking about conceptions of what improv is, what it is not. And as we were also discussing specificity and cultural references, I wondered about code switching. So before you all came together as Some Black People, how much code switching was involved in the way that you would be, you'd be working with non-Black and specifically white folks on the stage, Charles?
Yeah, quite a bit. my biggest fear, I think, regarding code switching was not giving white people and white audiences permission to laugh at the wrong things.
Okay.
I think you don't want to accidentally sell your people out. That was kind of the main thing for me.
Is there something that you remember maybe that, you know, that reflects that, or any of you, you know, Aaron or Jessica?
The things that I remember are when I'm playing with white people on improv teams, and sometimes there's an accidental, something is named accidentally. Like, I remember one time someone, we were doing a scene about wizards, and someone accidentally named someone the Grand Wizard.
Oh.
And there was a moment of, like, what do we do here?
Right,
right. And so then in that moment is kind of where I'm like, do I step forward and point this out as a black person and kind of either make it laughable or point it out and sort of like make this character almost a bad guy, you know, to make it okay.
Yeah.
Or do we just let it move forward and move past?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where some black people came in. Because in that time, I was a member of some black people and we were doing pretty well already. So I had the confidence to say, hey, that guy is in the KKK. And then, you know, the rest of the wizards beat up that character.
Right.
Whereas
right.
without some black people, I think I might have just let it pass, you know, and we wouldn't have pointed it out.
Yeah.
And called it out, essentially.
Uh-huh.
So it's just a different level of comfort, even just knowing I have these guys.
Right,
you know, not even being on the stage with them, but just mm-hmm. knowing they're around to bounce things off of and have my back and stuff like that.
And Aaron, did you have a recollection or a memory of a time something similar happened with you?
Yeah, I wasn't actually on the stage, but I was in the room and all eyes came to me and it was a white person on stage that had made the scene was about hair, and they said, "Oh, your hair's so nappy. Let's brush your nappy hair."
Mm-mm.
And I'm standing in the room, and I'm like, "Oh man, okay." And of course I can't jump on the stage and try to fix this.
Mm-hmm. We shouldn't, rather.
Right? Yeah. Luckily, and this is something I do want to point out, in the improv, St. Louis improv community, especially specifically at the Improv Shop, we do have a lot of white people that are very, very sensitive to what lines they don't cross, what things are said and what things aren't said.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember one of my friends who was in the scene or on the sideline jump out and say like, No, I think it's, which is, you don't say no in improv.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right, right.
But in
until
that moment,
you do.
Yeah,
yes.
In that moment, she was like, oh, yeah, very disheveled. You know, they look like they've been through some stuff. Let's get them taken care of. And the person didn't immediately get that. And so they said it again.
Okay.
And they're like, we're just not going to use that word.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that we do in improv is we call out the crazy thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like Jessica said, we call out the Grand Wizard being a KKK thing.
Right.
We call out, hey, nappy is not, that was really crazy to say. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't use that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, because we want to expose it and let the audience know, as well as the rest of the people on the stage know, like, we don't agree with this thing that was said, or we understand that this thing was out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we take care of each other as well. And I think with black people specifically, I find myself, before playing with SPP, I found myself not really wanting, like, I would have a thought on maybe what I could do in a scene and a tag out or anything like that. And I find myself not wanting to say certain things or do certain things because I just felt constricted. And I'm like, maybe I just should be more accommodating to the rest of my scene partners, which, depending on how you look at it, could be a form of like, man, I shouldn't have to feel like that, you know? So, yeah, I mean, that it's rough, but I think that's also one of the good things about SPP is that the more that we play and the more people that know that we're in the space,
mm-hmm.
they're seeing that, hey, there's representation here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also something that we need to be very conscious of.
Yeah. Well, you all have not been together for very long. I think late 2023 is the date that I have seen. And you have seen quite a bit of success in a short period of time. Charles, how has that felt for you to go from being part of this small team and then being invited back to places, even in other states, to perform and then to be part of this 2024 Cage Match tournament that's coming up?
Yeah, it feels more real, I guess, than a lot of the improv work I have done, just because the content is so, like, ephemeral. Like, you do it, and mm-hmm. it's gone. And so now we have, like, it feels more tangible, I would say, you know, being, requested to come back and perform in a different city is crazy to me.
Mm-hmm. like a radio show is also ephemeral.
Yeah,
in its
yeah,
way.
Right. Well, yeah.
I'd like to wish you all good luck as you get ready for the Cage Match tournament. Your first match was moved from the 24th to 31st, mm-hmm. And we'll look forward to hearing about how that all goes. Charles Harris, Aaron Moore, and Jessica Nicole are members of Some Black People, an all-black improv team. Yeah, let us know how things are going.
Thank Absolutely. You so much. Thanks for having us.
This episode was produced by Elaine Chaw.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.